the question of the day. Did anybody do their homework? Well, you know the Bob Dylan song, Knock, Knock, Knocking on Heaven's Door. And eventually, every one of us will be knocking on heaven's door. And whether the door gets opened is dependent upon doing your homework. So just keep that in mind. I came across this book. Peter Wolben is the author, and it's called The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel and How They Communicate. So before, I just want to read you, the foreword, which to me is a beautiful description of the way of Zen. So to start, just to give a little background, we talk about form and emptiness. And, the Heart Sutra says form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. So form is emptiness, emptiness is form, form is exactly emptiness, and emptiness is exactly form. And so that means they coexist. There's no separation between form and emptiness. It's one thing. It expresses itself in two different ways. So throughout the history of Zen, many teachers have used nature as a way of teaching. I've mentioned about Dogen before. The way that he talks is not providing something, right? Not providing intellectual information, but expressing something. And one of the most favorite lines of Dogen for me is when he talks about mountains walking. Mountains walking. So this whole part now that I'm going to talk about is a metaphor for entering the way. And so he talks about mountains walking. And mountains walking means the natural activity of the mountain. And so we can have two relationships with mountains. One is we can be driving our car and there's the mountain over there. And we can look at it and it's beautiful. Or we can be walking down a road and there's a mountain over there. But there's a separation in that, right? It's me observing the mountain. And that's form, I'm standing here and I'm looking at the shapes and the colors of the mountain and the sky. But I am not part of that in that description. So the other way to look at it is to enter the mountain and be part of the natural activity of the mountain. There's no separation in that. We are the activity of the mountain. And John Dido Lurie and Dogen, he includes Dogen's, part of Dogen says, which is in the mountains. And he says, to be in the mountains is the opening of flowers in the world. And those outside the mountain do not know this. So if we're in our car observing the mountain, we are outside of the mountain. We have not experienced the experience of oneness with the mountain. So one is form and the other is emptiness. So when we enter the mountain, we begin to see its activity, right? And this is like the process of awakening. We sit, and at some point we begin to see the activity of the mountain, and we start to become that activity, right? And so that's going deeper into our practice and realizing oneness. But it's an interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. Everything in the mountain interacts, interbees with everything else. It's not separate. It's a whole activity that includes many different things. Animals, plants, flowers, trees, the passing of time. All of this is part of the activity of the mountain. So that's the mountain walking. I'm just going to read a little section of this. Because to me, I was struck by this. How a beautiful example this was of the mountains walking and the intimacy of the mountains walking. Now, he's going to use words which are somewhat fanciful. But if you read the whole book, it turns out they're really not, but it's just a good way of expressing interaction and relationship. We read in fairy tales of trees with human faces, trees that can talk and sometimes walk. This enchanted forest is the kind of place, I feel sure, that Peter Wolinbin inhabits. His deep understanding of the lives of trees reached through decades of careful observation and study, reveals a word so astonishing that if you read this book, I believe that the forests will become magical places for you. Now, this is metaphor, right? This is a way of expressing something. So using terms like faces and walking and magical, take that as metaphor, as expression. One reason that many of us fall into understanding trees is that they live on a different timescale than us. One of the oldest trees on Earth, a spruce in Sweden, is more than 9,500 years old, 9,500 years old. That's 115 times longer than the average human lifetime. Creatures with such a luxury of time on their hands can afford to take things at a leisurely pace. The electrical impulses that pass through the roots of trees, for example, move at a slow rate of 1/3 of an inch per second. Right? We usually think of the impulses as being like, pew. But why, you might ask? Do trees pass electrical impulses through the tissues at all, their tissues at all? The answer is that trees need to communicate, and electrical impulses are just one of their many means of communication. Trees also use senses of smell and taste to communicate. If a giraffe starts eating an African acacia, the tree releases a chemical into the air that signals that a threat is at hand. As the chemical drifts through the air and reaches other trees, they, quote-unquote, smell it and are warned of the danger. Even before the giraffe reaches them, they begin producing toxic chemicals. Insects' pests are dealt with slightly differently. The saliva of tree-eating insects can be tasted by the leaf being eaten. In response, the tree sends out a chemical signal that attracts predators that feed on the particular leaf-eating insect. Life in the slow lane is clearly not always dull. But most astonishing thing about trees is how social they are. The trees in the forest care for each other, sometimes even going so far as to nourish the stump of a felled tree for centuries after it was cut down, by feeding it sugars and other nutrients, and so keeping it alive. Only some stumps are thus nourished. Perhaps they are the parents of trees that make up the forest of today. A tree's most important means of staying connected to other trees as a wood-wide web of soil fungi that connects vegetation in an intimate network that allows the sharing of an enormous amount of information and goods. Scientific research aimed at understanding the astonishing abilities of this partnership between fungi and plant has only begun. The reason trees share food and communicate is that they need each other. It takes a forest to create a microclimate suitable for trees and sustenance. So it's not surprising that isolated trees have far shorter lives than those living connected together as forests. Perhaps the saddest plants of all are those who have enslaved in our agricultural systems. They have seemed to lost the ability to communicate, and as Wolinbin says, are thus rendered deaf and dumb. Perhaps farmers can learn from the forests and breed a little more wildness back into the grain and potatoes, he advocates, so that they'll be more talkative in the future. So he ends with the line, "Opening this book, you are about to enter a wonderland. Enjoy it." So when I read this, it struck me as a beautiful, beautiful example of the interrelationship of things, the natural activity of mountains. all the various ways in which the trees and the surrounding world interact. And who would have thunk it, as they say? So the next time, and every time thereafter, you walk through the woods, I hope you can experience it in a different way. Thanks.